honestly, one of the best songs, I think, to come out in rock and roll in the last, how old is this song?
Counting Crows. This song is probably
25 years old. Probably. I think this song came out when I was living in Seattle, and I was living in Seattle in the early 90s. I think this song is about 25 years old.
1993.
Okay. Wow, this song is 26 years old. You could play this song on like an oldies station if you wanted to. Hey, all the greatest hits from the 90s. It's Counting Crows and Mr. Jones.
That God, hurts.
I feel old.
Well, back in the days, oldies used to be like, you know, Bobby Darin, Elvis Presley,
sure.
Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. Now oldies is like what we grew up with in the 70s and the 80s.
No, now it's this.
Van Halen.
The 90s. This is an oldie.
And here's your oldies, Van Halen. Jump.
Mr. Jones and me. Daniel Jones, the quarterback out of Duke. There is not a word in the English language to describe just how shocked I was when you sent me the text today with the link to the story at ArizonaSports.com, mm-hmm. the story that you broke.
I want to make sure you're reading ArizonaSports.com.
Yeah. you're like the watchdog to make sure I'm reading our own website? I do, because Kellen Olsen and Vince Marotta and the whole crew do a great job over there. When you sent me a link to the story based off of reporting that you had done, that Daniel Jones, the Mr. Jones in this case, that Daniel Jones had a workout with the Arizona Cardinals.
Yes. Visited.
Visited.
He visited with the Arizona Cardinals.
Fascinating.
Yeah, you know.
Fascinating.
I had thought all along that the only quarterback that had come in for a visit was Kyler Murray. And then to hear that Daniel Jones had come in for a visit, you know, very interesting. My mind started like wandering and going in different directions. What does it mean? What? Why? You have 30 visits. Now, this kid's a good quarterback. He's 6'5". He mm-hmm. comes from a great pedigree. His coach is his coach was a quarterback guru. You know, a lot of people are very, very high on him. He's got prototypical size and strength and arm strength. And so there's a lot to like about him. He's one of the top quarterbacks in this draft. There's no question about it. But if you're not taking Kyler Murray at number one, you're sticking with Josh Rosen, right? And if you are taking Kyler Murray at number one and Josh Rosen's gone, where does Daniel Jones fit into this equation?
Right.
Rosen, Murray, Murray, Rosen, Jones. Now, there's several things that it could be. It could be you're just doing your homework for the future because you get 30 visits and you kind of like the guy and you never know when he may become available because quarterbacks become available.
Could very well be that, yes.
Could be that you are in the process of working out a trade with the Raiders for their 3 first-round draft picks so they could get Kyler Murray, and then you're going to sit there with 3 first-round draft picks and the first pick in the second round. You might be saying, hey, we've got 4 picks. We might throw a flyer on a quarterback that we could develop and then maybe trade, a la Jimmy Garoppolo. We'll go the Bill Belichick route. Mm-hmm. We'll draft him with with our late first-round pick or early second-round pick if he's available. It's good value. We have him rated very high on our board. And then, you know what, if something happens and Rosen doesn't make it, I've got a guy. But if Rosen does make it, well, then I could always trade him the way, San Francisco picked up Garoppolo from the Patriots. That's kind of the thinking right there was what I was thinking was maybe it's for the future or maybe it's for a possible trade. But you had another angle, which probably makes more sense than any
of
it.
Well, no. I do not dismiss out of hand your theories because at this point we're all just kind of spitballing this thing, right? I mean, nobody really knows for sure.
I have no idea.
We can all come up with guesses why they would do it. I mean, it might very well be exactly what you're saying. As unconventional as it may feel, if they do make this trade with the Oakland Raiders and the Raiders move up to 1 and the Cardinals get 4, 24, and 27, they might be sitting there at 24 and go, man, Daniel Jones is just way too valuable for us to pass on that. Even though we've got a quarterback we like in Josh Rosen, we have Daniel Jones as the 10th player on our board, and he's sitting there. We got to take him. Value trumps everything. I mean, even though it's not need, they might look. I don't dismiss that. And for me, this to me is almost a reaction to the market, because what the market has said for the last 3 weeks now, everybody associated with this game believes that they're taking Kyler Murray, right? Everybody.
Yes.
And this workout, this visit with Daniel Jones is almost like, not so fast. Who says we're going to take Kyler Murray? How do you know we're going to take Kyler Murray? And just to prove to you that we might not take Kyler Murray, we're going to work out Daniel Jones. Now what do you think? Now what do you think, Marketplace, about what we're going to do? Because, man, it's been...
I think you're nuts.
It's been overwhelming. Well, probably. The Marketplace probably goes, yeah, okay, whatever. But it has been overwhelming how many people think the Cardinals are going to take Kyler Murray.
Sure.
And one way to at least try to convince the world that that's not what you're going to do and keep them guessing is to work out another quarterback in this draft to at least take their eye off the ball and try to send out another cloud of confusion about what your intentions are.
There's nobody tying Jones to the number one pick.
No, not at all.
Nobody. It would only be if you traded down and got a boatload of picks, and then you're sitting there with this surplus of picks, and you're like, you know what? I can't have 12 draft picks join my team. Maybe I'll take a guy for the future. Maybe I'll take a guy to sit for a year or two and then try to get something for him. It's the only logical explanation to me is that you're going to get four picks in the top 33. You could take a wide receiver, a defensive tackle, an offensive lineman, and you know what? Throw a quarterback in there. We'll develop him. We'll use him. And maybe a year from now, we'll turn that into a first-round pick. Because we don't need all these first-round picks now. Maybe I'll get him, and then next year I'll trade him for a first-round pick.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It almost feels like there doesn't seem to be a lot of confusion in the marketplace about what the Cardinals are going to do. There seems to be this almost universal belief they're taking Kyler Murray. It almost feels like they brought him in for a visit to try to create confusion that does not exist right now, because it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of confusion about what they're going to do. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to create the idea, hey, we won't take Kyler Murray number one. We'll take Nick Bosa, and who knows? Maybe we'll take him at 33 with the first pick in the second round. Seems illogical that they would take that pick and do, but again, if it's a value thing, I don't know. It is like I said, when you sent me the text today, I was intrigued. My curiosity level was raised. I was confused. I couldn't wait to talk about it because I didn't know what it meant.
There is not a player that they've had visited where I, like, you know, my eyebrows raised. Cornerbacks, defensive linemen. Who's the kid they had yesterday? Jeffrey Simmons.
Simmons, the defensive tackle out of Mississippi State.
Kid be a top five pick if it wasn't for the torn ACL. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, everybody that's visited. Daniel Jones visiting here is a little bit of a head scratcher. Why? I mean, there's a reason, but I don't know what it is. Why did Daniel Jones visit the Arizona Cardinals? If they're not going to take Kyler Murray, they're going to keep Josh Rosen, right?
Yeah. Either way, good reporting on your part to be able to find that out, because that's very interesting news, and I'm sure a lot of people will be talking about that. We've got the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can subscribe on your iPhone and your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by National Bank of Arizona. It was the reason Ryan McDonough was fired, and it's probably the most important thing James Jones has to do this offseason now that he's the GM. How are the Suns going to find a point guard, and where are they going to go looking? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You must learn.
It's the Knowledge Drop.
Let knowledge drop.
The Knowledge Drop. Brought to you by Lifetime Windows. Did you know metal window frames conduct heat right into your home? Visit LifetimeWindowsAZ.com.
The knowledge that we drop onto you today comes to us from the NBA, who dropped the knowledge on us that the Phoenix Suns have the third best odds in the NBA draft lottery. Not the second, as we were hoping, but the third. Today was the tiebreaker between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Phoenix Suns since they ended. It's funny how in the draft lottery they don't have like some sort of tie-breaking scenario. They just literally have a random drawing to see who's the second worst team and who's the third worst team.
Rock, paper, scissors, I would do.
Yeah. I mean, something like that, rather than go to strength of schedule or common opponent. I don't know, whatever, something like that. But they don't. Random drawing, and today Cleveland was determined to have the second worst record, and the Suns have the third, which matters. It doesn't matter for the first pick or the odds for the second or third or fourth pick. It does matter because the Suns not only have a greater chance of finishing with the sixth pick, they actually now have a chance of finishing with the seventh pick.
Yeah.
It's like a 7% chance they can finish with the seventh pick.
More importantly, I think the chance to get either Zion or Ja, you have a 73% chance that you won't get them?
Correct, but that didn't change today.
That didn't change.
That did not change today. Mm-hmm. That all that changed today.
And that's all I care about, because if they're getting 3-4. Now, I like R.J. Barrett, but a lot of people will just look at this draft and say Zion or Ja.
Yeah.
For the Suns. Like, they need to get one of those two. And if they don't get one of those two, people are going to say trade the pick. Get a player.
And I would say that, too. I just don't know if it's going to be that easy to do, because I don't know if anyone's going to want that pick. No matter what happened today, the odds for one, 2, 3, and 4 are exactly the same for the Cavs as they are for the Suns. That did not change. It's just now being third, the Suns could fall all the way down to 7th, whereas if they were 2nd, they could only fall to 6th. Either way, we asked James Jones on the show earlier in the week how much the lottery could dictate what they do this offseason.
I mean, it's a factor. I mean, you know, when you go into the draft, depending on where you finish in the lottery, it determines where the value is for you and for other teams. If there's a guy that another team wants, they may be more inclined to talk. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. We're just focused on trying to do an evaluation of what we did well this season and position ourselves for the draft.
But I got to think, Ambo, when it comes to the search for the point guard, it matters a lot where they finish in that draft lottery.
Sure.
A lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's this one point guard that you would that if you got him, and again, the Suns are going to look at veteran point guards, okay? They're going to look at guys like a Ricky Rubio, a Corey Joseph, I expect, a TJ McConnell. They're going to look at point guards to try to, you know, see if they can get one to come in here. But if you get Ja, you're literally getting yourself a guy that can be the future point guard. A lot of the other guys that we're talking about, you know, whether it's Corey Joseph or it's a TJ McConnell or if it's a Ricky Rubio or any of those type of players, you're talking about a guy that's just, okay, that's like, I like Corey Joseph. He's young. I mean, he fits the timeline. But it's not a star point guard.
Nope.
And Ja's got the ability to be a star point guard. You wouldn't want to hand everything over to him right now. But if he could learn behind a Collison, a McConnell, a Rubio, a Joseph for a year or two, that, you know, then you might have something special.
Yeah, James Jones again with us on Wednesday. Point guard, power forward, those will be two of the main areas to upgrade.
We want to address every position, and that's either externally or internally. But we know we've had our challenges at the point guard position just due to lack of capacity and youth. And the power forward position will be important for us because we think it's important to add a tougher dimension down there next to DeAndre.
So the names that you mentioned in terms of veterans that they might look at, you mentioned Corey Joseph. You mentioned Darren Collison,
TJ McConnell,
Ricky Rubio.
Guys that are available that you could look at. Yeah, Corey's 6'3", he's only 27 years old. You know, out of Texas, good player. I mean, not a great point guard. This isn't Kemba Walker. This is just you're looking for somebody that is a good point guard, just a good player. Now, you don't need a scorer. You got Booker to score. You've got hopefully Oubre to score. You've got DeAndre to score. You've got plenty of scoring. You need a point guard that can play defense, that can run the offense, that can get guys open shots and open looks, and that's why you don't need a point guard that needs to score 20 points a game.
Yeah.
You don't need that.
No, if you don't get Ja Morant, the problem is that you might need two. Or I guess if you don't get Ja Morant, then you need a point guard, and now you're back to Tyler Johnson playing a lot of minutes as the point guard.
I think Tyler Johnson ends up sliding into Troy Daniels' role more likely as the backup to Booker.
But if they don't get Ja Morant,
then they have to play Tyler more.
Then they might have to play him more.
They'll probably have to play him more. Kobo's not the answer. Melton's not the answer. The ideal situation for one of those guys, probably a Kobo, is that you're the third point guard.
Right.
You're the third point guard and you barely play and you just sit and you learn and you develop. I mean, that's probably the ideal situation. And so you would need two. And if you don't get Ja, then you're probably talking Tyler Johnson and one of the guys I just mentioned.
Yeah.
If you get Ja Morant in the draft, you know, then you still get one of those veteran point guards to be your starter for now.
It's funny. I was thinking about something you've said a lot about James Jones, sort of when we're talking about whether he's the right hire or the wrong hire for the Suns. And one of the things you keep saying is you like the fact that he didn't do anything stupid this year. That he
sure.
That part of his resume was that he wasn't trying to prove that he should be the general manager by making a bunch of crazy moves, hoping they would work to prove that he deserves the job. In fact, he did just the opposite. I'm going to kind of lay low, be cool, get a feel for the environment, and he didn't do a whole lot because he didn't want to do anything stupid that he would regret. Unfortunately for James, this is the offseason where he's going to have to really put his stamp on this organization. I mean, this is the time for inaction. It might have been during the regular season. That time is gone now. They have They haven't had a point guard in 18 months. They have to go get one.
They will.
You have to choose one.
There will be a regular point guard on this roster next year.
Yeah, I don't want to get in a hyperbole and say this is the most important Suns offseason ever. I mean, I think last season was the most important Suns offseason ever. But this one's pretty darn important, too. And he can no longer say, I'm going to play this one cool and not do a whole lot. He is going to be required to do a lot this offseason. And I'll be curious to see how he handles that. When he kind of took it easy this year in his first year as general manager.
The first thing you got to determine, in all honesty, is, you know, are you keeping your coach or are you going in a different direction?
Right.
And then once you determine that, then you got to start, you know, you've got the draft, and then you've got to see what you could do with Kelly Oubre. And then you got a power forward that you got to get, and you got a point guard. There's a lot to do. A lot to do to make this team somewhat competitive.
We're here for another half hour. We're at the Walmart Lake Pleasant Parkway and Deer Valley Road, and we're going to be here until 6 o'clock with your opportunity to buy a bottle of Woodford Reserve, the official bourbon of the Kentucky Derby, and you can get it engraved for free with the purchase of a bottle. They've got the 1 liter Derby special for $49.98. They've got the gift set for $29.97. You can get it engraved for free. Makes for a great gift for friends, family, clients, whatever the case may be. Kentucky Derby coming up, but we're only going to be here another half hour. Woodford Reserve is some good stuff. If you buy a bottle, we'll engrave it right here on the spot, but only until 6 o'clock.
Yeah, so get down here. If you're in the vicinity, pick up a bottle. It's on sale. You get it for a great price. Get it engraved for free while we're here.
Deer Valley Road, Lake Pleasant Parkway will be here until 6 o'clock. Seems ridiculous on face value. One analyst actually thinks that Josh Rosen is a better fit than Kyler Murray for Cliff Kingsbury's offense. Why? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Time for the Coors Light. What's on tonight? Games that we're going to watch this evening. San Diego Padres, Arizona Diamondbacks. More on this matchup coming up in a little bit, including, you're going to want to stay tuned for this. I haven't even heard this yet. Apparently, Torey Lovello claims he lost sleep over the Zach Godley decision last night. You'll hear from Torey and what he had to say about that.
He did a bad job. But, you know, listen, give him credit for when he does things right, and you blame him for anything. That's the manager.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, not having anybody warming up. I mean, it was obvious that the first two batters he faced in the inning that is he had lost his stuff. His stuff wasn't good. Left him in too long. Didn't have anybody up and ready.
We'll hear what he has to say about that. But coming up tonight, it's Luke Weaver and the Diamondbacks taking on the Padres. 6:40 first pitch, game two of the four-game set. And that is what we're watching tonight, brought to you by Coors Light, cold-lagered, cold-filtered Blue Mountain. Brady Quinn, a former NFL quarterback turned analyst.
I don't know. Can you really say that? Former NFL quarterback.
I mean,
you can say I'd rather former heartthrob, right, than the women love him. Former Notre Dame quarterback.
I can call you a former boxer, can't I?
You can.
Okay. I think he played
but
in as many NFL.
You don't.
Gambo was Muhammad Ali compared to Brady Quinn as an NFL quarterback.
I was Marvin Hagler. I wasn't a heavyweight.
Okay.
Just,
fair enough. How about former professional football player?
Yeah.
Or is that still too? All right. Brady Quinn. We all know who we're talking about.
He had 12 touchdown passes in his entire career.
Yeah, that's 12 more than you and me combined.
He was sacked 41 times.
Wow. That's pretty bad. Brady Quinn was on the Pick 6 NFL podcast yesterday. And I'm still not sure I buy the logic. But he believes that in some ways you can argue Josh Rosen is actually a better fit for what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do than Josh Rosen. Here's why.
I think it's a good fit. I think people fail to realize, what was Cliff Kingsbury? He was a dropback quarterback, so and he played within the system. So was Graham Harrell. So was pretty much every single other quarterback that's played in the air raid system, or even Gardner Minshew, who was up in Washington State this past year and led the led college football in yards. I mean, look at who he even had this past season, too. McLean, I think, was the young man's last name. DeLeffy, I got hurt. Then Alan Bowman came in as a freshman. He was a pocket passer. I mean, the entire offense has been based upon pocket passers. In fact, you could look at who's played the air raid system and make the case that Josh Rosen's actually the better fit than Kyler Murray is.
He even went on to argue that in some ways Josh Rosen is better because he's safer. He's better because he's got a year under experience, and at least you know that he's capable of starting in an NFL game, and that might make him a safer pick. I don't know if I buy that from a physical skill standpoint that he's better at the position than Kyler Murray or better at running that system. But Brady Quinn tried to make that argument that he was.
It is the safer pick. To stay
I would agree with that.
Stay with Rosen is safe. You take Bosa, you trade the pick. You just say, listen, we drafted our quarterback last year. He's our guy. We believe in him. And then when he fails, if he does fail, if he fails, then you could second guess it. But if he succeeds, then you made the right decision.
But I think what Brady Quinn is failing to recognize here is that there's going to be an offense that Cliff Kingsbury will run if Josh Rosen is his quarterback. That offense will be at least somewhat different than the offense he'll run if Kyler Murray is his quarterback. So to say that Rosen is going to be better in a Kingsbury offense, Cliff is going to, I would presume, build an offense around Rosen's strength that will differ at least slightly, if not more than slightly, from the kind of offense that he would build around Kyler Murray. I just don't know if you can make that comparison knowing that the offenses are probably going to be different based off of who's quarterbacking them.
You know, if you go back and you look at the quarterbacks he had at Texas Tech, he didn't have those type of quarterbacks all the time. The majority of the times he had quarterbacks that didn't run that much.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, if you
and
go
that's
look
kind at, of the point that Brady Quinn was making in part.
If you go look at the Texas Tech quarterbacks that he had, you know, he didn't have a lot of guys that were the most mobile, that ran a whole lot. So I don't necessarily buy the whole, you know, you've got to have this to fit his system. It's got to be this guy to fit his system. Plenty of quarterbacks that have played under Cliff Kingsbury that weren't as dynamic and as athletic as Kyler Murray. And he had success with them offensively. So I expect that he would be able to have success with Josh Rosen.
I would think that he would too. Meanwhile, on the NFL Network, Bucky Brooks, and they put up this graphic. So they were talking about Kyler Murray on the NFL Network, and Bucky Brooks was talking about him, and he put up this graphic of notable Cliff Kingsbury quarterbacks: Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Johnny Manziel, Case Keenum. Bucky Brooks said, look, I'll tell you right now, Kyler is the best quarterback that Cliff Kingsbury has ever had of any of the guys on that list, including Mahomes.
He's the best quarterback that Cliff Kingsbury would have had at his disposal. Understand this. Kyler Murray was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. You look at Pat Mahomes, who was like a three-star level recruit. Baker Mayfield was a walk-on. You look at the potential of what Kyler Murray brings to the table, the arm talent, the pocket poise, the running ability, the playmaking ability as a runner and as a thrower. All of those guys on the list can't match what Kyler Murray potentially could be at the next level. And that's saying something considering Pat Mahomes was an MVP.
So the NFL Network took that quote, those guys can't match what Kyler Murray potentially could be at the next level. That's saying something considering Pat Mahomes was the MVP, close quote. That was retweeted by Brittany Matthews, who's Pat Mahomes' girlfriend. And she said, bro, what? And then with the rubbing your chin emoji, a couple of rubbing your chin emoji. Wait, you're telling me that Kyler Murray right now is a better quarterback than my boyfriend, the reigning MVP of the National Football League? Bro, what?
Ooh.
Rub my chin emoji, rub my chin emoji.
Yeah. Those girls stick up for him. That's good. That's good.
That's good for her.
She'll probably get some trolls on social media ripping her and stuff like that.
But, I mean, I see the point that Bucky Brooks is trying to make.
Absolutely.
I mean, Mahomes was look, Mahomes was viewed by a lot of people around the league as kind of an experiment in some ways. Like, oh my gosh, the Texas Tech guy? I mean, yeah, he can throw the ball through a brick wall, but can he play quarterback at this level? And as it turned out, he got matched up with the perfect coach for his abilities in Andy Reid.
Yes.
The guy who could pull out the very best. A lot of people think the same thing about Cliff Kingsbury, pulling out the very best out of Kyler Murray.
Listen, a lot of people want to know if Cliff Kingsbury's offense could translate to the NFL. I mean, if you want to give him every weapon possible, then Murray makes sense because, you know, you've got an investment in Cliff Kingsbury, and you may want to protect that investment by giving him Kyler Murray. But, you know, I think when you hired Cliff Kingsbury, you had no idea that that Murray was even going to come out for the draft. He was going to be a baseball player. So you hired him with the full intention that he was going to get Josh Rosen right. So, I mean, there's different ways that you could look at this. There's different ways to go with this. Either way, it's not as much Kyler Murray as it is Cliff Kingsbury and his offense, which is going to be on trial here in the NFL to see if this could be successful or not.
Mark Dominic, remember him, the former GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, saw this story on the internet a couple hours ago, and I tagged it. I wanted to bring it up here. Mark Dominic, having been in the same shoes that Steve Keim is in right now, quote, I can't imagine Steve Keim at this point walking into Coach Kingsbury's office and saying, look, we're still debating what we want to do here.
I agree.
They should have their idea set. And if they're not taking the quarterback, then now it's a matter of how do we subtly shop the pick without the whole world knowing that we're not taking him, and how do we want to handle this? But I think that they have made their mind up, close quote.
Because everything's done. I mean, everything's done. You've met with Bosa, you've met with Quinnen Williams, you've met with Kyler Murray. Like, this is, it's over. It's done. You know, now you've still got a couple visits lined up and things like that. But you put your board together and you've got right now, today, I would be shocked if they didn't know what direction they want to go in. Now, do they know what the offers are from teams? They might have, some offers that they believe are out there, but those offers aren't in concrete. They could get better or they could get worse, depending on how things go in the next 2 weeks.
Join Aaron Maloney and Arizona Sports tomorrow. Volkswagen North Scottsdale, 11-1, giving away tickets to Larry Fitzgerald's celebrity softball game, D-backs tickets, a whole lot more. They'll also be hosting an adopt-a-dog event in conjunction with Halo Animal Rescue with an on-site food truck as well. So head to the events page at arizonasports.com for complete details. But that's Maloney tomorrow. Volkswagen North Scottsdale, 11-1. It was a decision that certainly played a factor in the D-backs loss last night, and Torrey Lovello says he lost sleep over it. We'll explain coming up here on this Friday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the Diamondbacks as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, presented by Ram Trucks, built to serve.
D-backs baseball coming up tonight, 6:40, first pitch here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Burns and Gambo Show getting you ready for it as it's the D-backs and the Padres. Last night, Diamondbacks losers to the Padres in the opener, 7-6 the score. Down 6-1 in the game, the Diamondbacks rally with five runs of their own, only to see their best reliever, Archie Bradley, give up a solo home run to Manuel Margot in the eighth inning after just blowing away the first two guys in that inning, Hunter Renfroe and Manny Machado, with nothing but fastballs. We were talking with Steve Berthume earlier. You could just kind of see Margot kind of timing it up, looking at the pattern, looking at what Archie Bradley was doing. He was sitting fastball, and he wailed on it, hit the solo home run that was the go-ahead shot for the Padres, and they go on to beat the Diamondbacks. We're now 6-7 on the year after last night's
loss.
Yeah,
you know, you felt really good after they were able to make that comeback because they got, Zach Godley, had a really bad inning, and they got behind 6-1, rallied to come back, the big hit by Escobar, and then, Archie Bradley gave it up. I mean, you always want a shutdown inning after you score some runs, right? You have a big inning. You always want a pitcher to come out. You want a shutdown inning to kind of keep that momentum going. That didn't happen yesterday. Archie gave up the home run, and then the Padres were able to close it out and get the win.
But I'm glad you brought this up earlier because I do think a very underrated part of that game last night was the Diamondbacks having the bases loaded with only one out in the first inning.
Against a rookie pitcher coming up from Double-A. He's only pitched one game in Double-A anyway.
Against a kid, and they got out of that inning relatively. They gave up a run, but it was before they had loaded the bases. Pedro Avila gets out of that inning unscathed, and he goes 5 1/3, 4 hits, a run, 2 walks, and 5 strikouts.
Had him on the ropes.
Yep, had him on the ropes, let him off the hook, and then he kind of shut him down after that. So tonight, and it's your pitching matchup brought to you by the Berg Simpson Law Firm. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to Berg Simpson. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURGSimpson.com. Luke Weaver, the right-hander, gets the start this evening. He's 0-0 on the season, but with a 6.75 ERA. His last time out against the Boston Red Sox, 5 hits, 3 runs in 5 innings. He struck out 4, walked 2. Got off to a shaky start, just like he did against L.A. Got to a shaky start in that game, settled down, pitched better, but still only gave the Diamondbacks 5 innings when it was all said and done.
Yeah, and he's going up against Chris Paddock, and he's going to make his third start for the Padres. He was traded from the Marlins to the Padres, and 2016. So drafted by the Marlins, traded to the Padres. And he's a guy that's got really good stuff, and he's going to pitch today against the Diamondbacks. It's his third major league start, and he's a guy that they're really high on. When you start to look at the Padres and the young players they have, and you know the fact that they could be a team on the rise, this is one of the guys that they really like. They traded for him. You know, he actually went through Tommy John surgery, but he's back now, and they feel really good about him as being a big part of their rotation.
It's funny. The Padres are a first-place team right now. They're 9-5.
Yes.
They're first place in the NL West.
Yeah.
I saw this kind of crazy little nugget about them. They've got the second youngest pitching staff in baseball. They lead the majors in starts made by pitchers who are 25 years old or younger.
You know, so that was the headline in the paper today in the Union Tribune. Another young starting pitcher shines as the Padres win a wild one in Arizona. That's the storyline for their season so far. Young pitching has prevailed, and you'll get another one tonight with Paddock.
Three Padres starters have already made their big league debut this year. Three. In 14 games, they've had 12 starts out of pitchers who are 25 years of age or younger. It's and Paddock, of course, is one of them as well. Torey Lovello, his handling of Zach Godley last night. Torey meets with the media before every game and after every game. And when he met with the reporters today, he acknowledged, "I made a mistake in leaving Zach Godley in as long as I did.
I want to show him that I believe in him and that he's one pitch away. He's always an uncomfortable at-bat. He can quickly rebound in certain situations and get three outs on five pitches. I've seen it many, many times. It's just I got to know the difference between his ability to do that or where eventually it's gotten to over the past couple of starts where it's gotten away from him. It's led to runs. Look, we got to win the game. We got to win the baseball game. That's the bottom line. It's my job to manage the pitchers and figure things out and make sure I'm putting the guys in the right position to be successful. So that one's on me last night. I feel like that's where I made some mistakes, where I didn't have a situation. I didn't go to the bullpen when I could have. Maybe it was a batter or two late.
I know you were in the press room last night. He wasn't quite as adamant last night about the mistake that he made. It sounded like he was really owning it much more today than he was last night.
Of course, and you know it's good. I mean, you know that's the one thing about Torey. Stand up. He's going to take it. I mean, he should have got Godley out of there earlier. I mean, it's very obvious with the first at bat. I mean, the first at bat in that sixth inning when he was facing Myers, his pitches were up. I mean, nothing was close to the strike zone. He walked him. Myers actually swung at a 3-1 pitch. It was like 10 feet outside the strike zone. I don't know how he swung at it. But he walks Myers, and he gets behind, you know, 2-0 to Hosmer. He singles. Machado singles. At that point, you got to stall. You got to get somebody up. You got to stall. And then you got to get him out of the game because he doesn't have his best stuff right there.
Torey Lovello talked about losing sleep over the Godley decision.
Yeah, I lost a little sleep over that last night, I'm not going to lie. I feel like if I could do it all over again, and it's hindsight's always 20/20, and I know the results, I would have definitely changed what I'd done. But you live and learn, and I think I'll pay attention to certain things at certain times with certain guys and a certain pitch count.
Okay, and that, to me, is the key to all this. Okay, what are you going to do about it now? You've acknowledged that. All right,
you'll have a quicker hook.
I made a mistake. How will that apply itself in the next Zach Godley start? What will you do? What telltale signs will you be looking for to know I got to go get him? I got to go stall. I got to go get somebody warmed up because he's done. He spiked curveball in the dirt, and that's it. He's about to melt down. I got to get him out of there now.
You don't go into it and say, okay, if you get a – it was the three batters. It was the Myers walk, the single to Hosmer, the single to Machado, and you're probably thinking, okay, I might not be right. Now, you know, Renfro hit into a fielder's choice. The runner was safe at second. He came back to strike out Reyes, and that probably gave Torey some belief that, okay, he could get out of this inning. But when Tatis tattooed one, I mean, he hit it all the way to the wall. I thought it was out. And Adam Jones caught it right at the wall. It was a sack fly, but he hit it so hard. And you're probably like, okay, they're on him. Like, they're on him. Don't let him face Hedges. And Hedges hit the three-run homer, and that put the game, you know, at the time it looked like it put the game out of reach, but the D-backs were able to come back and tie it.
This is how aware this organization is of wanting their starters to believe, to feel that belief that the team has in them, that the manager has in them. Listen to Torey Lovello telling this story about the strategy they employ so that the starters can't hear the bullpen phone when it rings. Swear to God, he talked about this today.
We definitely have a strategy for that, yeah. We'll either wait for the roar of a crowd and Mike Butcher will stand right next to the phone so they don't hear it ring, yes. Or on certain nights, we'll just use walkie-talkies so they don't hear it. But that's how valid these feelings are for these players. They could hear a phone ring and it could change their mindset. So that ought to tell you what showing a lot of faith in a pitcher can do for him, or a player can do for him. But yes, we have a strategy for that.
I've been in that ballpark 1,000 times. You've been in that ballpark 1,000 times. You can hear that phone.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear that phone when you're watching at home on TV, right? I've heard it before.
I got walkie-talkies. You should get a CB radio.
Well, you know all about that, don't you?
10-4. Shaping up. Sign language. Smoke signals.
Bandit, this here is the grave robber.
Play a country song, and I'll bring up Chafin.
Butch Bandit, this is Lovello. I need you to get Andrew Chafin up pronto.
My handle's Silver Tongue Devil, and I'm here to tell you your fellow CBers are mighty proud of you out there. Come on.
Lovello over.
AC on a down low, 10-4. AC. I mean,
Sheriff is up getting hot, Lovello. This is Butch Bandit over.
Man, they are so worried about the psyche of the players. It's insane. Like, you can't hear the phone ring? I mean, listen, if you're a player and you hear the phone ring, I better pitch better.
Right.
I got somebody. Listen, you don't think a player could look out and see if a guy's warming up?
No, they can't. But you know what? But it's not just Torrey. I mean, look, we've been covering this sport a long time. How many times have we seen with our own eyes Diamondback starters in years past? Man, the minute things start to go wrong, you can see them looking in the dugout like, are you going to come get me?
So what's next? Are you going to put curtains up in the bullpen so you can't see if somebody's warming up? Why do you have curtains in the bullpen? Well, we don't want to start
pitching
to see if somebody's warming up because then it's going to hurt his psyche. I don't need the phone. Just look over your shoulder. Is anybody – hey, listen, I just gave up 3 hits in a row. I'm going to peek over my shoulder as I'm rubbing the baseball. Is anybody warming up? I want to know. I don't need the phone. I'll look at the bullpen.
Those bullpen phones are loud. They are so loud. They're obnoxiously loud.
What happens when you use the bullpen phone? Somebody gets up and they start warming up. I don't need the phone to tell me that somebody's warming up. I can look.
I can just look over my right shoulder and go, oh, yeah, Chafe's warming up. Okay.
Yeah. They don't have any faith in me. I suck.
So it goes. We're going to call it a day. Diamondbacks baseball is coming up next. We will see you Monday at 2 o'clock here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Have a good night, everyone.